Tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's February 2022, and this is episode 276, which is a spoiler-filled conversation about the Disney Plus Star Wars series, The Book of Boba Fett. On this episode, I'm joined by Lisa Cooper, who has a BA in Literature and an MA in Religion. She is a copywriter and editor at Relevation Media. She is also a freelance writer and a poet. Lisa has written a feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called Boba Fett's Character Arc Actually Makes Sense. You can read her review free online at our website, equip.org, if you're one of our journal subscribers. Access to our online exclusive articles are included in every journal subscription. If you're not already a subscriber and would like to read this review, please subscribe also at our website, equip.org. Lisa, it's good to have you on again.
Yes, thanks for having me.
Well, I am looking forward to talking to Lisa today. It's been about 2 years since she was last on the podcast, and she's written for us on gun violence. So if you're interested in going back to the archives, especially if you're a new listener, you won't want to miss the podcast that I did with Lisa about that topic. But as I mentioned, that she has written an article for us, a review for us, of the recent Disney Plus Star Wars series, The Book of Boba Fett. And of course, Star Wars, since its inception in 1977, I mean, if anything in addition to the Marvel Universe is going to be well known by people even who are not nerds or who don't pay that much attention to movies and TV, at least most people have heard of Star Wars, so they have a general idea about what it's about. But because this is a television series, you know, I usually ask our authors who write critiques and reviews for us on film and television just the question that we frequently get asked by a lot of Christians, and that is, why should Christians interact with contemporary media? Because for some Christians, it seems quite ungodly and not just secular, but the very environment that comes out of Hollywood is opposed to the Christian worldview. So why would a Christian even consider watching Star Wars at all?
Yeah, I think that this is a really great question, especially as we as Christians try to be in the world but not of the world, which is always a difficult line to walk. Popular media today, it really ends up being this moment of connection with other people. And it can drive conversations with others, you know, Christians and non-Christians, about different shared experiences or different opinions about how, you know, something in Star Wars could have worked out differently. You can really get to a lot of interesting conversations about morality and, you know, even come around to the Christian faith at some point. And, you know, it really is the new literature. This is how we're all kind of coming together around shared themes and ideologies and perceiving the same kinds of themes and tropes that pop up all over the place in popular media. So it really is like a cool way to engage with other people. So, and my family, you know, we are big Star Wars fans. So of course, anytime we go anywhere or see anybody that we know, they always want to talk about the new Star Wars that's out, because that's a point of connection for them with our family. So yeah, I think it's a really beneficial thing to just to be able to just meet with other people and be able to have a conversation about something. Kind of like sports, but not, you know?
That's true. I would say that's similar. There's a shared, I guess, interest around something like people who are like football fans in particular. And so in, you know, different nerd universes, there's a camaraderie, but with certain fans, and Star Wars certainly is that. Star Wars is one of my favorite films, the first one, the original 1977, A New Hope. So it is very interesting that now it seems to get even more just life in exploring some of the lesser known characters and maybe the lesser known time periods of the universe. So in the Star Wars universe, though, for people who are into Star Wars, Boba Fett is fairly well known. But for those people who are, you know, don't know much beyond, you know, Han Solo and Luke and Leia and Darth Vader, can you explain who Boba Fett is and what do we know about him before the beginning of this series, The Book of Boba Fett?
I think Boba Fett has kind of become this cultural icon. Basically, he shows up. We see him first in the original trilogy, 4, 5, and 6. He's this rough and tumble bounty hunter. I always think about the moment where Darth Vader instructs him, no disintegrations. You know, he's known for being this kind of ruthless murderer, but Darth Vader wants them alive. So he disappears into the Sarlacc pit after Han Solo causes his jetpack to malfunction. And so all of this lore has developed around, well, what happened to Boba Fett? Did he actually die in the Sarlacc? And, you know, then the prequels came out and the prequels kind of flesh out his character a little bit more. Boba Fett is the unaltered clone of Jango Fett. Jango Fett considers Boba Fett to be his son. Jango Fett is a foundling of the Mandalorians, which explains his armor. We see mention of that later on, you know, in The Mandalorian. So yeah, there's this history of Boba Fett that's a little bit more complicated. He's sort of this, he's an unaltered clone of a foundling of the Mandalorians. I think we get kind of used to Din Djarin in The Mandalorian, who kind of follows this strict religious sect. But that's not Boba Fett's background. He's kind of been raised and brought into the bounty hunter family. You know, I think about like how he's been kind of this legendary figure. There's this moment on even Parks and Rec where Patton Oswalt stands up at a town meeting to give this dissertation, like to filibuster a bill. And he goes on this rant about Boba Fett emerging from the sands of Tatooine. And, you know, it ends up bearing striking resemblance to what actually happens in this show. And this was like 9 years ago. But so people have been talking about this forever, that Boba Fett probably did live. And, you know, what would have happened to him? You know, even his helmet is like iconic. We had Star Wars cookies on our cookie table at our wedding. And we had like Boba Fett faces, like Boba Fett helmets. So this has become like an icon for Star Wars. So I think there's a lot of mythologizing that went into his character. So going into the Book of Boba Fett, I think there were a lot of high expectations for what he would be like and what he would do.
Well, I do want to just give a little bit of backstory to a few mentions to people who aren't, you know, really hardcore Star Wars fans like myself. And that is, you were just mentioning the Sarlacc pit, and we first see this. It's this really grotesque kind of creature. And it's in The Return of the Jedi, which is the movie that was released after the first one, which was in 1977. And it is in this pit in the sand of the desert planet Tatooine, which is where we first see Luke Skywalker in Star Wars, the very first movie. So just to give somebody the background of what is the Sarlacc and where was the Sarlacc pit. Now, before I ask you something specific to the context of Boba Fett's character in particular, I do want to say I'm going to ask you something about the Clone Wars, but in case anybody doesn't know what the Clone Wars is, it's animated TV series mainly. I mean, it was first a feature film, and I remember seeing it in the theater, but I'm not really a big animated person. I mean, I know I do watch animated films for this podcast, but they're not my favorite of any style. It can be anime, it can be Disney. I just don't somehow resonate with animation, but it was back in the day. Cause I remember my husband and my oldest son, who's now married and an adult, watching it on Cartoon Network back in the day. And it was a very, very rich, my understanding is the Clone Wars is a very rich series, a lot of different characters and some very interesting backstories for characters that happens in this animated. So it's in the animated series that I'm going to ask you about in case people are like, oh, I don't remember the Clone Wars, although it was a feature film. But you make a point in your article specifically that noticing the context to Boba Fett's character, given that, you know, the Clone Wars changed how we should view his story arc. So what happens in the Clone Wars with Boba Fett? Because I ask this because when you see, and I didn't see the Clone Wars, but when I see this Boba Fett and the Book of Boba Fett, it's just so different than I've always thought of Boba Fett as this real bad guy. And so what happens in the Clone Wars and why does that matter as we go into this particular Disney Plus series?
Yeah. And it's so difficult when you're talking Star Wars to really get all of the context for everything because there are so many things. So I understand, like, this is a little bit difficult if you have no background in Star Wars. So hopefully the people listening will bear with us a little bit on this. But the Clone Wars animated series, it's actually wonderful. I don't gravitate toward animation normally either, but there are some really incredible story arcs in that series. So I definitely recommend it if it's at all interesting to you. But the Clone Wars takes place, you know, Boba Fett is early teenager to late teenager in the span of the show. So we see him, he pops up three different times. And I think that, you know, the connection between Dave Filoni, who directed The Clone Wars with George Lucas, and also is working on The Book of Boba Fett. This is why I felt like it was necessary to go back to this point, because we see this kind of fills in some of the details after his father, Jango Fett, is killed in Attack of the Clones, which is Star Wars Episode 2. Boba Fett's a kid, and he sees, you know, Mace Windu kill his father. But then when you get to Clone Wars, there you have, like, him as a teen, kind of wrestling with things. So in Season 2, there's a pretty big arc. It's three episodes that Boba Fett is featured in. And the purpose of this whole arc is Boba Fett is wanting to take revenge on Mace Windu. And so he teams up with some bounty hunter friends. And if you're familiar with some of the other kind of extra Star Wars stuff, Aurra Sing, Bosk, and Castus are there. They're fairly well-known other bounty hunters that are in this universe. And so they team up with Boba Fett to kind of enact this revenge plot. So Boba Fett gets on this cruiser where Mace Windu is with Anakin. And has this plan to kill Mace Windu by planting a bomb at the door of his room. And so he ends up not succeeding. It blows up the door. A clone trooper is there. And the clone trooper dies. But Mace Windu survives this kind of attempt at his life. And in this, like, desperation, Aurra gets on, like, the comm with Boba Fett and tells him, just blow the reactor core of the ship. And so he goes and he kind of reluctant and he keeps reiterating to Aurra throughout the whole thing. I'm not a murderer. I just want justice. I don't want to hurt anybody. I only want to kill Mace Windu because that is the striving for honor, the striving for justice that, you know, we kind of connect with Boba Fett. So when Aurra Sing ends up, a lot of stuff happens, but Aurra Sing ends up leaving him for dead when he's captured by the Jedi and she's trying to evade capture. So this is the first moment when really Boba Fett has been alone in the universe since his father was killed. And he has this group of people that he thinks he can rely on and they leave him. And this is what he means when he says, you know, I'm just my own man, like making my way in the universe. So he ends up getting imprisoned by the Jedi. So we see him in prison in Season 4 and he's quite a bit older. Season 4 of The Clone Wars. Then we see him released from prison. So there's quite a bit of time that he's actually in prison as a teen, which I'm sure shapes how you see the world. So Season 4, Episode 20, we see him running his first bounty hunter missions by himself. And he has, you know, some of the same guys, Bosk is there as well. We see him kind of running his own mission, even though he's a teen. And Asajj Ventress is another kind of well-known character in the Star Wars universe. She's like a Sith trainee. There are lots of plots with her in the Clone Wars, but she ends up running a mission with Boba Fett. And basically they're on the subterranean train and they have to protect the cargo that's in the middle of the train. When Asajj finds out that it's this young girl who's going to be handed over as a child bride. She ends up turning on Boba Fett kind of in the last moments and binds and gags him and puts him in the trunk and lets the girl free. So here's like the second time a bounty hunter associate, both women have double-crossed Boba Fett and kind of left him for dead. There's other stuff that happens in this episode too. But at this point, after being in prison, after the failed assassination plot of Mace Windu, all of this time has passed. And now we kind of see Boba Fett being this ruthless bounty hunter. And so he didn't start that way. And he certainly was pretty clear about not wanting to hurt anybody at the very beginning. And so we can see the progression from young kid who just wants justice to this teen that's kind of been scarred and sees the injustice in the universe, who's now willing to hurt other people in order to get money as a bounty hunter. So it's certainly not something that happens overnight.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast. And today's guest is Lisa Cooper. We've been talking about the Disney Plus Star Wars Universe television series, The Book of Boba Fett. I can't believe it, but it's been rather challenging to give away this free subscription to the Christian Research Journal that we had the giveaway from 2021. But so far, we have not heard back from Dixie Morgan at webmaster@equip.org. Dixie Morgan, you have until end of day, 5 p.m. Eastern on February 25th to contact us for your free subscription. Otherwise, next week, I will be spinning that wheel a third time, and maybe that will be the charm to get a winner for this free subscription to the Christian Research Journal so that we can start our new giveaway. So please contact us, Dixie Morgan, at webmaster@equip.org. Now, I want to say thank you, as always, for the many ways in which you help other people find out about this podcast. There are literally millions of podcasts out there, and so we hope that our content will rise to the top because we have a lot to offer to equip the Christian. So we ask that you help us out by just telling a friend about it, or emailing them your favorite episode, or posting on social media something that you've enjoyed listening to, or if you listen to it on YouTube, just dropping a comment there, because more comments that are on a video on YouTube, the more YouTube will suggest it to people and people will find our content. The other way that you can continue to get this content would be to subscribe to the Christian Research Journal. And a subscription includes not only our print issues, but also all of the free online access exclusive that only subscribers can access. So that's part of the $33.54 subscription, not just the print, but also the online exclusives. You can subscribe to our magazine at equip.org. Now, of course, there's sometimes you don't have in your budget for $33.50, but we would be so grateful to you if you would just give us a tip of the equivalent of a daily coffee that you might have out. So $3 or $5 or even $10, every little bit helps, and you help us meet our budget to pay our fabulous writers, to have them come and talk about all of this content on our podcast, and we are so grateful. So thank you.
Well, Lisa was just giving us kind of a summary of some of the things that happened in the Clone Wars, but she did mention a few characters. So just to have some people whom are not as familiar, Mace Windu is a Jedi Master, and you do first encounter him in the first three movies of the Star Wars trilogy that came after the original 1977 film. And then you mentioned Ventress, who is a Sith, and a Sith is just another word for the bad guys, basically. Darth Vader was a Sith. So, and you also mentioned, you were talking about season four, but I just wanted to let everyone know, if they're wanting to commit to the Clone Wars, it's seven seasons. So just know that it's a commitment that you want to do. And as a matter of fact, I mean, like I said earlier in the podcast, I'm a major Star Wars fan, but I didn't watch the Clone Wars. I don't know if I can watch the Clone Wars. I probably should, because my husband still talks about some really fantastic moments in the Clone Wars. Well, you make a point in your article that the Book of Boba Fett, the series, and Boba Fett's story in particular revolves around many Christian themes. And so what are some of those themes? And can you tell us about how those themes maybe impact, you know, the viewers and how we see the story and how we see who he is?
Yeah. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people haven't watched Clone Wars, and so they don't get that Boba Fett didn't just start off as this kind of ruthless guy. But because there's been this disconnect from like justice, I think one of the most important things that we see with Boba Fett is that he longs for justice and wanting to see Mace Windu brought to justice for murdering his father ends up being this major driving force in him even getting into the bounty hunter lifestyle to begin with. And I think, you know, as Christians, we can see that there's this longing for justice because we have the law written on our hearts. But even people outside of the Christian faith want justice. I mean, this is why that's part of the whole law being written on our hearts. We just kind of know where that comes from. So Boba Fett experiences true injustice when his actions at this like attempted murder plot bears full punishment and he goes to prison. Whereas like Mace Windu murders his father in front of him. And there's this line in Clone Wars. I can't remember exactly which episode it is, but it's in the season 2 arc that I mentioned between 20 and 22 episodes. He has this kind of throwaway line, like when Mace Windu is talking to Anakin, he mentions, oh yeah, you know, I killed his father and that's why he's upset. It definitely doesn't feel like Mace Windu feels guilt or remorse for this. And so I think this striving for justice is definitely like a Christian theme that we see come up. And yeah, as Mace Windu kind of walks free, even though he killed his father. And, you know, there's a lot to be said. At what point do we take justice into our own hands? And where is there a line between justice and revenge? And I think that this brings up a really good conversation point, you know, when discussing Boba Fett's character arc. In addition to this, I mean, there are lots of other things we're going to end up talking about as we get to some of the other characters and talking about different characters. But just to name a few other things, we see two different death and resurrections in this show, or, you know, the theme kind of death and resurrection. There are no literal deaths. And we see redemption. We see people being purchased for a price and brought into a family. We see adoption. We see the humanizing of a bunch of different types of people on Tatooine, including the Tusken Raiders and the Jawas, even. This importance for family and of like this clan that Boba Fett is building. I'll get into more detail as we go. But just to name some, I think that these Christian kind of underpinning themes in the show really underscore the fact that we're not getting backstory on Boba Fett just to tell us who he is. We're seeing redemption in real time. Boba Fett's story really focuses heavily on his backstory and his time with the Tusken Raiders and, you know, his relationship with Fennec. And all of that being brought into the present, we really see these redemption plots play out. So as we talk about some of the other characters, I'll talk more about it.
So you just mentioned Fennec. I want to ask you about the character Fennec Shand. So people know who she is. She shows up actually in the Mandalorian series. You first see her there. And you mentioned earlier about that there are female bounty hunters too, not just non-female bounty hunters, because I think some bounty hunters are like alien creatures as well. But she's also kind of an assassin. She's really good with, you know, killing people. And she's worked for some bad people as well. So I just want to ask you a little bit about Fennec Shand, because her story is tied to Boba Fett and, you know, it's introduced in The Mandalorian. So how does her experience with Boba Fett and just her place in the Star Wars lore underscore some of these Christian themes?
Yes. So Fennec, we see her in a number of different places before the Book of Boba Fett. She was also in Bad Batch, which is related to the Clone Wars. That's another animated series that's also worth watching. There you kind of see her in her bounty hunter prime. So we see her in The Mandalorian. She has an incredible eye. She can shoot a target super far away. She's incredible. I mean, she's so cool. Like, I think Ming-Na Wen is like a treasure to Disney, honestly. She's been in so many things. And but yeah, Fennec is this extremely sharp bounty hunter who ends up being left for dead on Tatooine as well. So there is this Yeah, there's this overzealous bounty hunter. There's a whole plot with the Mandalorian, Din Djarin, where they have to do this mission. They have to get Fennec and trade her in. And this overzealous kind of young bounty hunter guy ends up shooting her and going after Din as his next target. And so Din shows back up and sees her presumably dead, laying there, and he leaves. And that's when Boba Fett rescues her. We see in the Book of Boba Fett. And so Fennec has this whole death and resurrection arc as well. She's kind of scooped up by Boba Fett, brought to the outskirts of Mos Eisley, where she's given kind of this new cybernetic abdomen, and she's brought back to life. This is a great illustration of like the death and resurrection theme, which we also see with Boba Fett, which I guess I should have mentioned in the last question. But we see Boba Fett, you know, in the pits of the Sarlacc, you know, stomach, and he emerges victorious over the grave, you know, coming out from the sand. So these death and resurrection arcs tie these two characters together. That's one of the things that Boba Fett says. The first thing he says to Din when they meet up in The Mandalorian the first time, we see them kind of show up in the same place. He says, you know, I was left on the sands, or Fennec was left for dead on the sands of Tatooine, and so was I. And so they really have this connection over what it means to really be like alone and facing death alone, but then having someone come and rescue them. And so, you know, I think that this Fennec story, especially kind of, it reminds me of The Good Samaritan, where you kind of have this unlikely guy. Boba Fett is not like the most upstanding member of society, as we've seen, but he's the one who goes and he rescues her, and he places a huge bag of money on the table for the mod artist to prioritize her and save her life. He pays her debt, has her kind of fixed up, and then he says, you know, you don't have to pay me back, and she chooses to follow him out of her own free will. This is a kind of a story that I think exists beyond just the Christian sphere, this idea of like taking care of someone who is harmed, caring for the needy. But it certainly is a Christian theme as well. There's even speculation that Fennec would double-cross Boba Fett as well. I mentioned this in the article, that there's this article by someone named Meg Dowell who speculates that Fennec is dropping hints throughout the show that she's going to be the one who betrays Boba Fett. And I don't buy it. I think that she's meant to be this kind of redemptive female bounty hunter in his life. We've seen two who have left him for dead, and you know, this is the maybe third time's the charm, but he has this like actual positive relationship with another bounty hunter, which I think is really valuable.
So one of the things that happens in the Book of Boba Fett is there are various episodes with Tusken Raiders, and Tusken Raiders are, they're not shown to speak English, you know, so they have their own language. And it's interesting because they have been a part of the Star Wars universe for a very long time, and yet they haven't really been explored very much as far as who they are. They're kind of like nomadic people. They live in the desert, I would say, and they live on Tatooine. And of course, they were in the original 1977 first film of Star Wars. And they are mysterious in some regard because there's not a lot known about them. So it's very interesting that the Book of Boba Fett uncovers a little bit more about their society. And so what role do they play in shaping who Boba Fett is? And why does this matter, not just to the Star Wars universe, but also to Boba Fett? And I would say that those particular episodes, and there are quite a few of them in this series, which isn't very long, that there have been complaints that, you know, why are we focusing on the Tusken Raiders? This doesn't seem to be very action filled. It is slow and there's not as much dialogue just because of what I mentioned with regard to the Tusken Raiders. So why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about why they've kind of have a little bit more prominence in this particular series?
Yeah, I think their prominence starts in The Mandalorian. There's a scene where Din Djarin negotiates safe passage through their land. This is actually in the same arc that they meet Fennec, and Fennec is left for dead. He uses sign language to talk to them and negotiates passage over their land and hands them over the binoculars that other bounty hunter had with him. And so, and they let him pass, you know, without hurting him. So at that moment, there really was something different about the Tuskens. What we've seen previously is not great. They're seen as being vicious and violent. And, you know, there's that famous quote from Attack of the Clones when Anakin has, you know, murdered all of the Tuskens who took his mom captive and leading to her death. And he says, you know, I killed even the women and children. They're animals. I slaughtered them like animals. And Padme, of course, doesn't react, which I think does well to reveal that there really is this prejudice against this people group, that they're not understood to be fully human. And so the great thing about the Mandalorian and now the Book of Boba Fett is that we see the Tusken Raiders doing more human-like things. You know, they're not just these vicious animals, but they have traditions. And they have, a lot of it had to do with Temuera Morrison, the fellow that plays Boba Fett. He kind of brought in some of his Maori heritage when they were working through some of the Tusken Raider history and developing that. So that really did help flesh out kind of the people group's rites and rituals. So you see, after Boba Fett is kind of left for dead on the sands of Tatooine, he's robbed by the Jawas. And then the Tuskens find him and kind of drag him with the Bantha over to their camp. He's taken as a prisoner. But it's not until he ends up saving this young boy's life, and then he's seen as being worthy by the Tuskens, and he's brought into their clan, we see, like, this group that has this rich kind of, I don't know, tradition, that they train him to use weapons. They teach them their history. Talks about how they explain how the Dune Sea used to be full of, you know, water, and how now it's all dried up, and they bring him into their rites and rituals. He has that weird lizard thing crawling up his nose and showing him where to go. And he finds a stick that they make into his weapon. And so there are lots of connections, I think, between that and maybe, you know, it can be applied out to lots of different people groups that over the years people have viewed as being subhuman. I think that there's this really great redemption for the Tuskens that we see that they're more than just animals who are, like, vicious and hurting people for passing through their land. There really is, like, this code of honor with them. And so I read an article called "The Book of Boba Fett is a Long Overdue PR Campaign for Tatooine." It's linked in my article. I think it's a lovely explanation of how the fact that the Tuskens are being redeemed and being, like, considered more human is actually a really good thing, because we kind of have this bad idea of Tatooine in general. Like, why would anybody want to be there? But yeah, so he points out that the Tuskens have this honor code that Boba Fett also has. And so it makes sense that they would get along. But it's interesting how the people that were supposed to be the most animalistic are actually the people who end up teaching him to be honorable and to rule with respect, and all of the other things that sort of change his character for good in the series. I think that's really interesting. But this also kind of gets back to the Christian theme of, you know, Christians believe that all people are made in the image of God. And so there really is no differentiation between who's more human and who's less human. And that ends up being a really important thing when we look back on our own history as Christians and how the church has treated people, or how our culture has treated people. So yeah, Boba Fett seeing Tuskens as people and also becoming more human by having encountered them, I think is a really important theme to kind of pull out.
A couple of little, I guess, fun factoids about the Tusken Raiders is that the sign language of the Tuskens in the series, The Book of Boba Fett, was developed by an actor named Troy Koster, who's actually been nominated this week for Best Supporting Actor in a film for CODA, and Troy happens to be deaf. So that's kind of interesting that he helped work on that film. And just so our listeners, if they're interested in the film CODA, which has nothing to do with Star Wars, but to see this actor act, he does a phenomenal job, is we covered that back in episode 251 last summer. And you can find that on our website, equip.org, or in your podcast feed. Look for episode 251 if you're interested in watching the film CODA and then listening to that. But that's kind of fun. Also, Lisa just mentioned Bantha. In case people don't know what that is, they're these giant beasts. They remind me of like woolly mammoths is kind of what they look like. And the Tuskens use them. They ride them. They're kind of their transportation. They're very, not primitive, but they just live really in nature in the desert of Tatooine, kind of like nomads do, probably in deserts in the Middle East kind of thing. Now, I want to ask you if there's, you know, for the Christian apologist who listens to this podcast regularly and subscribes to our journal and reads our articles online, what is there of apologetic value to any of the themes that you mentioned that are in the Book of Boba Fett? Because of course we want to equip Christians to be able to use different media that they already are looking at as springboards to get into conversations with people who are seeking or are wondering about Christianity. And how can the Book of Boba Fett be seen in that way?
Yeah, so there are so many ways that you can bring up these kinds of themes with non-Christians or other Christians, even to kind of, you know, iron sharpens iron, your faith with other people. But I think, you know, as we're talking about the theme of family, of, you know, Boba Fett ends up being kind of adopted into this family of the Tuskens and accepted and encouraged and brought back to his kind of honorable roots. I think that there is a lot you could say about adoption and what that means as Christians, that we are adopted into not only God's family, kind of in our salvation through Christ, but also adopted into the family of the church. And what does that mean as Christians that we need to then live together in this community, serving one another? I think that that's definitely a conversation to be had. When I think of apologetic value, especially when talking to non-Christians, one of the most important things I think of when looking at the Book of Boba Fett is this reappearance of this death and resurrection theme. Death and resurrection is the center of the Christian faith. We point back to Jesus's death and resurrection for our salvation. That is the defining feature of our faith. And so to see it play out in popular media, even in these kind of smaller iterations, I think it really does underscore the fact that we're all kind of aware that there's something to be said there about death and resurrection. So one of my favorite things to look at is C.S. Lewis talks about in his book Miracles, this idea of the Corn King myth. Our world reflects this kind of death and resurrection. We see around us leaves changing and dying, and then their resurrection in the spring. We see, he likens it to the death and resurrection of corn, and that's where Corn King myth comes from. His point is that nature itself does this whole death and resurrection thing. And it testifies to the fact that there is a death and resurrection we should care about, you know, in Christ. So these themes of like death and resurrection are not limited just to the Christian faith. They pop up in other mythologies. They pop up in pagan myths. They pop up in popular media. But I think it's interesting to just see that there's this death and resurrection that kind of shows up over and over again. C.S. Lewis says that the Corn King is derived through human imagination from the facts of nature, and that the facts of nature are derived from her creator. And so the death and rebirth pattern is in her because it was first in him. And so God reveals himself in and through creation and prepares people to receive that death and resurrection of Christ. And so it definitely opens up a doorway for a conversation about the central tenet of our faith, which is the death and resurrection of Christ, which I think is kind of fun. There's also, you know, you can talk about morality, about this question of honor and respect that Boba Fett brings up. Is it better to rule out of fear or out of respect? And even so, like, that ends up in the finale. And I know we haven't really touched on the finale yet, but in the final episode of the Book of Boba Fett, we see Boba Fett in this kind of ruling out of honor and respect. He's willing to give up his life for everyone that he's kind of brought into his kind of makeshift household. And so he becomes like this type of Jesus, this picture of Jesus, where he's willing to lay down his life for his people. And then all of those people end up responding in kind and being willing to lay down their own lives for others. And so there's this beautiful image we get of Jesus just in Boba Fett being like willing to lay down his life for others. And so I think that there are these moments of connection to Jesus himself, which I think is really cool and certainly like opens the door for those conversations.
Well, I do want to talk about some of the criticisms, I would say fan criticisms of the Book of Boba Fett, and ask you if they have any merit. I mean, literally today, I saw in my social media feed a friend who's a pastor who's a major, major Star Wars fan. I mean, this guy is like a major Star Wars fan and passing it on to his kids and the whole nine yards. And he literally said, the Book of Boba Fett, what a bad show and season, and the finale was very boring. And felt that the best episodes were when Boba Fett was not in it. And he's hoping there's no season two. So for those fan people who really hate it, boy, they do hate it. And so does this have any merit at all to it? Because either people really like it or they really don't like it.
Yeah, I think one of the major critiques I've seen, just to start things off, I know there are a lot of them and I can get to more. The biggest one I see is that Boba Fett isn't what we expected. Boba Fett isn't the guy that I wanted. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that there's this kind of lore about what could have been with Boba Fett for so many years. It's given fans the opportunity to really think hard about what they would want to see in a character and come up with their own kind of fan imagined future for him. And then you're always going to be let down. Like, there's no way that's from on high, all of the people over, you know, who are producing Star Wars are going to make exactly what you want to see. So I think part of that is for that reason. People aren't willing to set aside their own preconceived notions and just enjoy something for what it is. I think it becomes a lot more difficult when you have an idea of what you think it should be. It's never going to live up to that. The question about Boba Fett being soft, I think that is probably the biggest thing I've seen from people. Well, what happened? Like, why is he soft now? Why is he, you know, trying to rule with respect and not out of fear? And I think, you know, I've kind of covered this already, but he never intended to be this ruthless bounty hunter from the beginning. And certainly he stayed alive because he was able to be a bounty hunter, but that doesn't negate the fact that when he met the Tuskens and he was sort of adopted into their family, that he was then reminded of his roots, that there's honor and there's honor and respect are foundational and not just, you know, doing these odd jobs for people that may end up resulting in people dying. I think a lot of that also stems from comparisons between him and Din Djarin, the Mandalorian, because we kind of got our Mandalorian fix with Mando, right? Like we had this guy who was just ruthless and could take a punch and, you know, even with his helmet on the whole time, he acted so well. You know, he could bring you to tears just, and you don't even see his face. So like, I think, you know, Boba Fett has his helmet off most of the time and he feels kind of wooden or he's not as expressive as the Mandalorian with Grogu. I think it's impossible to compare the two. They're certainly two very different characters and have two very different backgrounds and reasons for doing what they're doing. And, you know, I think, I don't know how wise it was to bring Boba Fett in following The Mandalorian because of that comparison, but I'm not mad about it. I think that he, I think that Boba Fett's character is very much in line with what they were setting up early on. You know, people were upset that it was too slow at the beginning. And I agree that the pacing was a little strange because it started off so slow. And then all of a sudden, everything was happening all at once. And it had nothing to do with Boba Fett. So that was an odd choice. Episodes 5 and 6 felt rushed and out of place.
That's interesting that you say that the last couple of episodes are the ones that were all of a sudden quite different than what went before in the series seemed rushed to you. And then people who have not liked the series said, oh, that's exactly, this should have been, every single one of the episodes should have been like that. Is because, and you know, like I said, this is divisive among the fans. Another major Star Wars fan that is a friend that I see them post on social media. They said that really this is a story that kind of lays out the lore of the Star Wars universe, which is quite vast, and it can't be rushed. And it really is expanding, you know, the world building that's done in the novels and the comics and the video games and the RPGs, which is different than, oh, I've just watched the main core films or something. It just really is doing some of that world building that some of the other, maybe I guess you have to be a hardcore fan if you're, you know, into the comics and the novels and the video games and so forth. But so some of this world building that's been done both in The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, do you agree that it's really just kind of doing some foundational groundwork to really explain and introduce, you know, there's some characters introduced, like we said, from the Clone Wars in to this series, and it takes time to build those worlds. So has it been successful? Some would say it hasn't, but others, like the person I just quoted now, said, yeah, it has to do that. It's part of what it means to build the Star Wars world.
Yeah, it's so interesting to me because if you go back and you watch the original Star Wars trilogy, 4, 5, and 6, those movies are quite slow. There are lots of establishing shots, and you see different worlds, you see people existing in the Star Wars universe. But then when you get to the newest trilogy, 7, 8, 9, everything is so fast paced. It's insane. I think people forget that Star Wars actually did do a lot of this kind of slower pacing at the beginning. And that to me was what seemed to be happening in the Book of Boba Fett. You know, you have these kind of, you're immersed in the world and you're seeing the world from like the character's eyes. And that's valuable when you're in a unique place. And I think part of the kind of redemption of Tatooine itself that we see in The Mandalorian and the Book of Boba Fett, because Tatooine was kind of seen as, you know, a junk planet, maybe, in the original Star Wars films. You know, it's kind of sand and not very nice. But showing that this is actually a place that has a history, and the sand people are people too. And even the Jawas are kind of fleshed out as characters, and they're seen as people. Pelimoto, the mechanic with the curly hair, who helps take care of Grogu in The Mandalorian, like, she talks about dating a Jawa at one point. And so you don't even think of the Jawas as being people to date or something, like, from the main characters in Star Wars. So I think having these moments to kind of redeem Tatooine and to show, you know, there's this history of the Dune Sea, and even in the finale, like, purging the evil from Tatooine in getting rid of the Pikes and stopping the spice trade. I think that there's a lot to be said about just building a world that has these redemptive qualities, that has been fixed in one way or another, or fleshed out in one way or another. So yes, like, maybe the pacing was slower than we're used to at the beginning, but I think it was for a reason. I think we were, to me, like, the Book of Boba Fett was meant to be the character of Boba Fett and what's going on with him. And I think all of the incidentals around it ended up making it feel kind of slower to other people, because it wasn't getting to the main storyline fast enough. But that's why when we hit 5 and 6, it really does kind of speed up, because it's back in the present tense, present day stuff. So, I mean, I love that the Book of Boba Fett and The Mandalorian have made connections to other Star Wars shows. And that, I think, is what's fun about Star Wars, is that you get to see not just the world building, but also the character building from across different stories.
So I want to ask you this. What do you think about Boba Fett becoming a crime lord? You know, he kind of dethrones the Hutts and takes over the Hutts palace and is trying to negotiate with all the various different groups in the main city. How does that, just that whole kind of him trying to manage all the quote unquote bad groups, bad guys, how does this fit into the scope of a redemptive arc?
Yeah. So it's so interesting that, you know, that's the scene that we get as the teaser for the Book of Boba Fett is him murdering Bib Fortuna, who was the guy who worked for Jabba the Hutt, who had taken his place after he died. You see Boba Fett and Fennec taking Bib Fortuna's throne and kind of starting to rule in his place. And that's the shot that you got at the end of The Mandalorian to preview the Book of Boba Fett. And I think maybe that's why people were so upset, is because at the end of The Mandalorian, you get this picture of him as like this crime boss. And you think that that's what the story is going to be about. And it is kind of, it ends up getting there. But then you kind of go backwards and do a lot of background before you even get to the main plot. So I think Boba Fett, having experienced the loss of his people in the Tuskens, we find out in the finale, which, you know, I kind of been speculating the whole time that the Pikes were responsible for the death of his tribe, the Tusken tribe that he was a part of. And they blamed the Nico speed bikers for it. And so he takes revenge on them. But then establishing himself in this position as kind of crime lord over this area, to me, seems like an attempt to kind of redeem the land in honor of the Tuskens, to stop the spice trade. He keeps mentioning throughout the series as he's walking the streets that he wants to make it safe. He wants to make the streets safe. It kind of makes sense to me that this is the natural outgrowth of wanting to establish himself outside of the bounty hunter life, or, you know, being for hire. It seems like he'd rather be the one calling the shots. But at the same time, he still has reiterated that he's not interested in ruling like a normal crime boss. He's not wanting to kill people. In fact, he ends up having mercy on a lot of people and bringing them into his whole kind of family that he's cobbling together as like a crime boss. So if he's bringing peace to the streets and reacting against the tyranny of the Hutt rule, and I mean, it's kind of interesting to think about how he and Fennec both worked for the Hutts at one point or another. And they're kind of, instead of being the ones that are hired by the people that rule in that place, they're taking their spot. But I think, you know, we see in the finale, as he gets the respect that he wanted, and there are people bowing to him in the streets, and they recognize that he put his life on the line for them, and they respect him and they honor him. They're, you know, I think what he wanted out of being a crime boss is fulfilled in the finale. And that, maybe that's why, like, at the end, he and Fennec are like, this is kind of boring. Like, I don't know that there's anything else we can do here. We're going to do something else. I don't know. I don't know how, I don't know what to make of the ending. But yeah, I think that there is something to the fact that he kind of wanted to redeem that position for an honorable goal.
So what do you think about just all the chatter around episodes 5 and 6? Because, of course, episode 5 comes along and basically, except for Fennec Shand showing up at the very end, it's about the Mandalorian. And, you know, again, it was very divisive about with fans. The person that I quoted earlier who thought the, you know, the whole series was very boring, thought the finale didn't work, but the only good things about it were episodes 5 and 6. So what do you make of some of that criticism, and is it even valid? I mean, is it good that all of a sudden we get Mandalorian again and we don't see Boba Fett at all?
I thought it was an odd choice. I'm not mad. I loved episodes 5 and 6. They're there are so many amazing cameos and cool stuff happens. And I mean, if you put Grogu in anything, I love it. He's my favorite. So I'm not mad about it, but I think it was kind of weird to have Boba Fett not in episode 5 at all and not speak in episode 6, but just kind of show up in the background of a scene. It was kind of odd. But I think when you take it together with the finale, it's sort of like having a film kind of broken up into three pieces, where you have the setup of what's going on in the world, and then you have Din Djarin, who's at the same time going to show up in the main storyline for Boba, but he needed to be in the right place at the right time, so they had to kind of get him there. And getting Grogu in the right place at the right time, too, so that he can play the role that he played in the finale. I think it makes sense. So I'm not mad. The cameos were great. And, you know, anytime I get to see Ahsoka, I'm happy as well. She also has a ton of history with Star Wars in different various places in the Star Wars universe. She's in the Clone Wars and in Rebels, and, you know, she's kind of been all over the place. She was in The Mandalorian. So bringing Cad Bane in was also really exciting as someone who's watched the Clone Wars. So these are all good things, and they ended up being a good setup for the finale. But I think in the midst of them, I was sort of waiting for Boba Fett to show up. And it felt kind of strange.
So speaking of the finale, let's talk about the finale. And, you know, I quoted someone earlier who said, what was that finale? But did you expect the finale to be that? And I do want to mention to our listeners, you've mentioned the name a few times, Grogu. That would be AKA Baby Yoda. So he's another creature that looks like Baby Yoda. He is, in fact, kind of a baby. I think he's only, you know, under less than 100 years old. So that's a baby with their species. And he's kind of attached to the Mandalorian. They're kind of buddies. So what did you think about the finale? Did you think that it wrapped everything up? Did it leave you wanting and wanting more? Did you feel like it's setting us up for the Mandalorian season 2 or 3 at this point?
Yeah, I think I really enjoyed it. I think their episodes 5, 6, and 7 of this series really had a lot of moments that were really exciting for someone who loves Star Wars, right? You get Luke showing up, and there are all of these really exciting moments. But I think it is not to be understated that Boba Fett riding a Rancor is like amazing. That was so exciting. But yeah, I think wrapping up the storylines and kind of bringing the whole conflict of the Pikes and running their spice run through Tatooine, bringing that to a close, I think made a lot of sense for the story. And we get some amazing dialogue between Boba Fett and Din Djarin, and they're talking about honor and committing to die for one another. Just perfect, like, Mandalorian stuff. You see an end to Cad Bane, which is wonderful when I've kind of been invested in this character for a long time, and I've seen him around a lot over the course of Star Wars universe. So it's nice to see kind of where his story ends. Fennec being awesome and getting rid of all of the Pike Syndicate members and other territory leaders. And again, Ming-Na Wen is just amazing. I think the reunion of Grogu and Din Djarin is adorable and great. I don't know. I can just go on. But I thought it was a good wrap up. It was better than I expected, because I felt like there were so many things kind of left in the open, and it could have gone a million different ways. But I think we see a satisfying payoff for all of the character development that Boba Fett did at the beginning of the series. Episodes 1 through 4, all of this heavy lifting for his character pays off in the finale. And that was really what I was hoping for. I was hoping that the character development was really the point. And I think the finale proved that it was, because his ability to restrain himself in a confrontation with Cad Bane and then be willing to risk his life for his people. There are all of these moments that, you know, it wouldn't have made sense with Boba Fett's character if we hadn't seen this kind of development in the beginning of the series. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what to do with the ending, like I said, but, you know, is Cobb Vanth, the mayor, going to take over? I'm pretty sure that was him in the Bacta tank at the end. I'm not sure. I love the redemption arc of Chrysantin, the giant bounty hunter that was going to kill Boba Fett, but then Boba Fett saved his life. Now he's the one who was willing to put his life on the line for Boba Fett. There were all of these moments of like redemption and really character payoff, which I thought was great.
Well, finally, I want to end the podcast by asking Lisa a couple of fun rapid fire questions. I do this so that our listeners and subscribers can get to know our authors a little bit better. So according to you, maybe just today, what is the best sandwich?
Ooh, okay. I love a good like Italian sub, but it has to have all of the stuff on it, like oil, vinegar, mayonnaise, all of the things, all of the sides.
And okay, this has to be asked after our in-depth conversation. What is your favorite Star Wars film? I know that you like some of the other things like the, you know, Clone Wars and things like that, but let's just keep it to the first 9 films.
It's got to be Return of the Jedi.
And, you know, it's going to be spring soon and spring cleaning. So what is something that you own that you should really throw out?
Oh, no. I think I have a pile of papers on my desk that I need to go through and throw out.
Well, thanks, Lisa, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to episode 276 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, which was a discussion of the Disney Plus Star Wars series, The Book of Boba Fett. Today's guest was Lisa Cooper, and she's written an online exclusive article review for the Christian Research Journal. Her review is called Boba Fett's Character Arc Actually Makes Sense. And our subscribers can read her review for free online at our website, equip.org. If you're not already a subscriber and would like to have some of this online access, you can try it out for $4.99 a month if you want to, or you can get everything, our print magazine and our online access, if you'd like to subscribe at equip.org.